On this special edition of Uncensored Radio, a UCR exclusive interview, we talk with sex workers on how sex work affects women. Joining us tonight is Bonnie Tonic, a stripper and sex show performer who loves her work and feels that it is empowering for women. Also tonight, we have Jenny Ketchum, author of I Am Jenny, who shares her experiences as former porn star Penny Flame, including a very special guest appearance from porn star Sunny Lane.
Are you ready for this one?
UCR. We saying what we want, give it to you nonstop, any place, any time, not afraid to speak our mind. That's just the way we roll, we never gonna go. Unstoppable, original, uncensored radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is a bit of a special uncensored radio. We're talking about the sex work industry, and we're just having like a frank discussion with a lot of different viewpoints that are going to just come into this. I want to sit back a little bit and just let the guests have the discussion amongst themselves, because I don't work in the sex industry, and I just want to get like how people feel. Don't you even start me, Jeffrey. Alrighty, so obviously we've got Jenny here, Jenny Ketchum. So Jenny, I know that Jenny was she's been a previous guest here on Uncensored Radio. Do you remember that, Jenny, when Jake interviewed you, Jake Pentland, years ago?
Long, long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, and that's how I came to know who you were, because obviously I didn't have anything to do with your previous career. Sure. I just read the book, and I loved your book, I Am Jenny. It was one of those books where I was reading it and I sat there. There was moments when it sort of made me really look at myself, and I'm like, wow, like I've got issues too. Like, not in a bad way, but just, you know, when you just develop that insight, because you obviously had a lot of insight. And I think that's why when you went on Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Drew, you were able, you took to it straight away, because you went there with the intention of just promoting your career, didn't you, at first?
Yeah. I mean, the intention was not to like get help or even get sober or any of that. It was because I think at the time, the idea of being a sex addict as a porn star was like cute and funny and sort of, I didn't really have like a tactile sense of like what it meant to like be behaviorally addicted to something. And it's like, oh, this will be like, of course I'm a fucking porn star who's addicted to sex. Like, like workaholism, right?
And I remember when you showed up on the show, and it was like, it was almost cute. Like, you had your little green scarf on, and like you come in, I think you were probably drunk as well or whatever, and you were like just walking in, and you were just like so blasé. And it wasn't until like a couple of days in that sort of the reality was hitting you. And you know, the moment that broke my heart, Jenny, and it's like same as reading your book, it's like you have such deep insight. It was when you were crying about feeling like a monster because of, you know, just the things that have transpired in your life and like in your behavior when you were younger. And that was awful to watch. Like, it sort of broke me a bit. I was like, that's when I was interested in you. And then when you were interviewed on Jake's show, like, I bought your book straight away because I really wanted just to know. And I just found it so amazing. Like, you were somebody who really gets who you are. And I think a lot of us struggle with that. And we sort of run from ourselves a bit. And, you know, we attach ourselves to different things because we just don't want to face the, what is it? Like, the just, we don't want to face like the tough stuff in our lives.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I know for me, there was a lot of really uncomfortable stuff that I was avoiding and that I had been avoiding for a long time. Like, whether they were experiences that were like outside of me or just like emotional experiences that happened inside of me, I spent a lot of time trying to just like numb everything from here down. And I think with getting into rehab and them not having a bar, like it really just didn't occur to me that I wouldn't be able to drink or smoke weed in sex rehab. Like it was not, like that didn't fucking occur to me. And then getting in there and then not being able to do those things. It took a couple of days for this sort of like effect of all of the substances that I used to wear off and for like the emotional experience of this being human to turn back on. And I think even in the things that we often think about ourselves, there's a lot of storytelling that we do to avoid something else. And I think even this idea that I was a monster was like, yeah, there's something like really sticky in that story. And if I could like hold on to being a monster, then I wouldn't have to like experience some other thing, which is just like me being human and like having pain. So there was so much learning and like beauty that came from that whole experience. And it means a lot to me that you read the book and that it meant something to you too.
Yeah, no, and thank you so much. And thanks for being here, because we wanted just to bring different perspectives. Like, you're someone who's exited the sex industry. Yes. Like, Bonnie's somebody who's working currently in it. She's been working in it for 20 years.
Yeah.
As a stripper.
Nearly.
And a nearly. Sorry, Bonnie, nearly 20 years.
Not quite as old as that.
But Bonnie has made, like, a living from dancing, and she's done it for 20 years, which I sort of think is admirable in a way, because, you know, a lot of girls sort of, you know, it's a short-term thing. They do that, then they go to other things and whatever. And Bonnie has been very consistent, and she lives in a regional area, because I've just moved back to our regional area in Australia. And she sort of made a career out of it, because Bonnie's never shied away from putting her face to it. She's never... You know, a lot of girls are in the industry where they don't want to be known, and they'll just do it for a while and whatever. Bonnie's always been very just proactive about it, and very, I guess you're quite candid, Bonnie, because you just say that, like, you know, this is what you do, and it's whatever. It's like the same as just working at the post office, you know. It's just your career.
It's funny you say the post office. My grandfather was the postmaster of a post office for many years. All my family know about my work. And well, when you like, cause you know, we went to school here, you can't walk into a strip club and go, "Hi, nice to meet you. I'm Cassie." And people are like, "We went to school together. Your name's Bonnie." Like, it doesn't work like that. People know who you are. It's a small town. There's no point trying to hide who you are if you want to work. Like, especially when you grew up here, like, and plus for me, a lot of people are just like, "Wow, you don't hide who you are. That's really awesome." I'm like, well, I like who I am and I like my job. So, but there are women who have different views, and that's fine, whatever suits you. But yeah, definitely I've made a living from this for the fact that people know who I am and know that I'm the outback stripper, the sexiest bogan you'll ever meet. Like that's, I'm happy to be that. And I love my life. So, and I like working.
The one and only Bonnie Tonic, sexiest bogan in Australia. So, I live in central Queensland, Australia. I'm well known as the Outback Stripper. I love getting naked at parties in the middle of the bush. Normally, I rock up naked and I often leave naked as well. Because of all this COVID stuff, this is now my office. Working from home 24/7, living the exclusive life. Don't get me wrong, I'm devastated knocking back probably like $1,000 at least a week at the moment, because people are still ringing for shows. She's so pretty. She's my whole world. Been stripping for nearly 20 years. And thankfully, my boobs still look like they're about 18. I'm definitely very lucky.
Do you ever feel though, Bonnie, like, you know, especially living in a small town, and I've felt it too, because, you know, I'm the other as well living here because I'm fabulously gay. You know, and like when you walk into somewhere, you feel the eyes on you. Like, do you get that?
That's just because
as well?
We come from a, our town's still country, man. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, we were looking at the Bulls the other day, we're the beef capital of Australia. Like, people, girls from the Gold Coast and places like that, they think they'll come up here and they'll, you know, they'll book a job out of town and they'll make so much money, you know, working out west and everything. But they don't realize that 20 or 30Ks west is literally like the bush. I'm talking like I literally am in the bush at the back of my house right now. There's no houses. Like I can see bush for, you know, it's bush. Like literally, like people just think, oh, well, you know, it's a big town, Rocky. We've got 100,000 people here. But as soon as you just go away, it's bush. Like literally the outback.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And there's just so many different things that make that in regards to the industry complicated, but also makes it exciting and fun.
Yeah. I guess also what I wanted to ask as well to both you ladies as well is how do you both feel about the sex industry just in general? Like how do you feel about it just not as obviously Bonnie, you like it because it's your thing. Like
but what you got to also remember is that the sex industry is vast and complex. When I say I work in the sex industry, I don't work as an escort, so I'm not having sex for money. When I could be doing proper pornos, but I'm just too much of a control freak. So what I'm doing is a premium snap and making my own online content and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think your point about like the broadness of sex work is really insightful, right? Like what does it mean to even be a sex worker? Like there are so many different things under that umbrella, and the spectrum goes from like
exactly,
you know, like people who are like in sex work sort of like involuntarily, and that ranges all the way to like people who are like deeply empowered by the sex work that they do, right? And so to say like, how do you feel about sex work, or how do you feel about like the sex industry? Like, yeah, that it's just too big of a question to even like wrap my head around. Like
I'm a sex worker, and I feel like it's a dirty word almost.
Well, I think it's changing.
If you say adult entertainment industry, to me, like, okay, I get it. We were talking like earlier today, like if you follow the show we do, my uncle, he's a crazy old man, you know, he died, and it came to me a couple years ago because he assumed, because me being the gay one, that I was kind of filthy and crazy, that he wanted to leave his porn stash to me. And he had like all these, so in the like late 80s, 90s, when kind of porn was big on VHS, would go and be the bodyguards when the porn stars would come into town.
Yeah.
So he would get their like panties and like have Polaroids with them and like have their pubes taped to the back of the picture, have their high heel.
Ew, yeah, that's a bit full on. Different strokes for different spikes.
Right, like it's crazy though. But so he's coming to me like a year and a half ago. This whole Italian mail being like, yo, Jeffrey, listen, I got all this stuff. You know, when I die, you got to keep it. So we're going through his apartment finding this stuff, and I'm like, what am I gonna do that? Like, who wants it?
Sell it on the internet.
No.
Yeah.
But to him,
like, there's a market for it, Jeff.
I don't care. It's gotta no, we threw it out. It's gotta go though. But to him it was this huge treasure.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it just to me it was like such a significant change, and even what the industry has gone through just from like the 90s. Of when people would line up to go to an adult store to get a VHS sign, to get a poster, to what it is now. Yeah. You know, like, I don't think it's, you know, my mother was like, Playboy degrades women. They know what they're signing up for, Mom. Like, you're just mad because you don't have the body. I mean, you know, because there's, and now that she's older, that my whole life, that's what I always heard my mother would say. Now that she's older, she goes, you know, if I was younger, I would do it.
Yeah.
She felt completely different later.
The funny thing is what I would like to know from Jenny, if she doesn't mind me asking, is, you know, when she was working in the sex industry, where did you learn how to do it? Because for me, when I started stripping here, we didn't even have a strip club and we didn't have the internet. So do you know what I mean? Like I just had to like teach myself everything. And like you'd get a few random girls coming up from Brisbane, different places to do bikey club shows. And then I would learn things again from that. But it's not like these days you can just Google it, or like when people work in major cities like Brisbane or Sydney, you know, there's numerous strip clubs, numerous, you know, adult entertainment venues, brothels, things like that. Like we've never even had a brothel in Rocky. So for me, it was just a totally different time to grow up. So and there were no other girls working here. So that lived permanently in the industry. Like they just kept coming and going. And yeah, so I don't know, like there was no one really to teach you. I had a friend buy my first dildo for me when I was 18 and my boyfriend was jealous and smashed it. So, I mean, where did Jenny learn? That's what I'd like to know. Like, I didn't haven't read your book yet. Luke's going to loan it to me.
Yeah. I was pretty promiscuous throughout middle school and high school. So I had plenty of practice in the bedroom before I got to the ripe old age of 18. And then, you know, when I got into the business, I started slow and I did like magazine layouts and it was all like solo girl stuff. And I'd say, you know, I'm not going to do like girl or like, I'm not going to work with other people. And then as the sort of like effect of being on camera wore off, that like intensity, I mean, same with going on stage, right? Like, it's scary as fuck to go on stage.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I don't mind.
For sure. But I bet at first it was a little bit nerve wracking, right? And then over a period of time.
I was probably really drunk, but I don't think it was.
Yeah. Totally. So alcohol for sure helps with the nerves in all cases I've found until, I mean, it's a fine line, right? But yeah, I think I worked up to it. I went to a lot of shoots. I watched a lot of other women. I didn't watch porn itself, especially like the more I got into the business, it seemed invasive because like I knew everybody, right? And it was like, I don't want to watch friends get fucked, and like that seems awkward.
What's different here for me, because everyone knows us, like I do sex shows on like my Snapchat and I post online with my boyfriend, like our friends and family, everyone know, like I've got friends who are my friends that will, you know, have my premium Snap. They still come around and have dinner with my boyfriend. I know it just, people don't even blink an eyelid about it because it's not dirty to us.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, like if I guess you're in America, like has do you feel like it's different because of being in America?
Maybe. I mean, like everybody in my life knew too. I mean, except for the men that I was dating, right? Like they were usually the people that I wouldn't tell. Or, you know, like, but everybody else knew, right? Like the people who were important to me all knew. And yeah, I mean, which I think really speaks volumes about where I was with like intimate relationships at that time with human beings. But there is you know, some degree of like, stigma that goes with being a sex worker in the industry. And I think a lot of it also is mediated by how much you own it, right? Like Bonnie, it seems like you really like own your job. You're not ashamed of it. Like it's just what you're doing. There isn't this like shroud of secrecy around it, right? And I think that like being able to show up for the job and for yourself and for the people in your life in that way that's like just honest and authentic and like genuine, I think that's really makes a difference in terms of like the way that people view you, because you show up and you're like, this is fucking me, like what,
you know? Well, I think it's helped change the industry in Australia, to be honest.
Yeah, totally.
Because back in the day we used to only get about $230 for a 30-minute triple X show, and I just thought to myself, I don't want to go to five different parties a night for that amount of money. You've got to, you're wasting time talking to people, changing the money, then you've got to go to another job because you've booked straight after. So then people want to talk to you and ask you questions and, oh, who are you, where are you from, what's your real name, you know? And I'm just thought, well, that's silly. If there's 10 people at a party and they can't afford $100 each to watch me do, you know, the full-on shows that I wanted to be doing, then I didn't really want to do it. So now I've sort of revolutionized the package. So instead of charging $250, I want $800, $900, $1,000, $1,500, even up to $2,000 for a package, and get to spend a whole day with people and just be honest and real all day and just have fun instead of just showing up and leaving and letting people talk about you after you leave and be like, oh, wow, this and that. Instead of talking them talking about you, you're talking about yourself with them and sharing stories. And it's sort of like a whole different experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds far more intimate than like, oh, show up, the stripper's here for the show, and then you have the stage. And then they throw shit at you and then you leave, right?
Like, exactly. And then they go, oh, geez, you know, that bitch was not very nice or whatever, you know, like people are so mean. Mm-hmm. Like if people are mean to me sometimes when I go to parties and I'm there.
Yeah.
Just like, they're mean to your face.
Yeah, that is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think something that I really, so I did some featured dancing for a while in my career, and like, it is, you have to have such hustle and like such heart and such determination. And I just didn't, after like being in porn for so many years where you show up, you get your makeup done, you get fucked, and then you leave. It was like, what do you mean I have to like really, really work for this? And so I just like failed miserably as a dancer, like across the board. And it required a significant amount of alcohol for me to be like comfortable enough to get on stage. And by the time I had that much alcohol, the heels did not work out. And so,
the thing. It's not just the dancing though, is it? It's like, you got to really bring the charisma and engage the men that want to watch you as well, and make them feel like you are someone who they can approach, and, you know, they want to spend money on you because you're somebody who they feel is, you know, just there, and you're likable, you're watched, like they just want to be in there, and that's what's going to get them to like you and spend money on you. It's just like anything else, I guess. It's a hustle, isn't it?
You really have to pretend to fucking like people.
Yeah.
And that's hard to fucking do, because I can't stand people just doing drag and then have to pretend to like people to get those stupid tips. The fuck off.
Yeah, but you know what works for me? I feel the more you like yourself, the more easy it is to do that engaging with people, because I just love myself so much. And when I get off stage or finish the show, I just tell people, yeah, fuck, I love my life, love me boobs, love me, you know, longest legs, you know, oh, love this, oh, check me out.
That radiates from you. I think that's pretty, you know, you could tell, like, you are very, like, you look happy, you smile, like, you know.
Thank you.
Seem to enjoy your life, you know?
Well, but we do have, like, sorry, Jeff, I didn't mean to cut you off. Bitch. Like, I wanted to ask Jenny quickly, like, how do you feel about
railroading?
Yeah. how do you feel about Penny now? Years later.
Yeah, I mean,
if you don't mind me bringing her up.
No, not at all. I mean, like, it is me, right?
Yeah,
I think I love that part of my life, and I don't necessarily, like, I used to see her as a very different person than me, and I think I've done a lot of work around, like, you know, still me. I was doing different things then, and going by a different name then, and like struggled with the identity, and ultimately, like, that was a really special and amazing and exciting time in my life. And I had a lot of fun, and I slept with, we weren't sleeping, but I fucked a lot of really right.
But like, it is fun.
I had a lot of fun. I had so much fun, and like, I'm having fun now, and it's in a very different way. Right. But I love her. She will be 26 forever.
do you ever miss the lifestyle at all of being a porn star? Because, you know, Penny Flame, you were huge then. Like, you were huge. Like, you were winning awards. You were doing a lot of stuff. Cause I only met you on Dr. Drew. Mm-hmm. And then I went and, like, I actually have never seen one of your porn videos, but I sort of looked you up a lot. And, like, I saw you won, like,
I don't think it was AVN.
You like you won like a lot of awards, and I'm just wondering, do you ever miss the kind of glamour of the lifestyle?
Yeah, I miss the highs. I don't miss the lows. I think, yeah, like of course I miss being on stage and like being fawned over and like getting my makeup did and like the pomp of it all, like so much fun. And it's such a part of my history, and like having had those experiences now, like I know the come down the night after AVN, right? Like when you get off stage and like you go back to your room and like it's just you and like a bottle of vodka and like nobody in that entire arena knows that like you're hurting or that like, yeah, just like the state that I was actually in, like the highs were amazing and the lows were like profoundly painful and like isolating. And I think I don't miss that degree of loneliness. And I wouldn't trade the highs. I wouldn't risk that degree of loneliness again, just for the high.
We've actually been joined by Sandy as well. I saw Sandy was in the room just before, and I know that she's also, because you're a social worker now, aren't you, Jenny?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Sandy's a social worker as well. And Sandy sort of holds some views that she feels that sex work really is, you know, damaging to women, mm-hmm. and that it leads to, like, I guess she will explain it better, but when she was speaking to me, she said, look, I think it's, you know, in our Western societies, like our first world societies, it can be an okay thing, but it's really just feeding into an industry where there are women in countries that aren't as privileged, that it just isn't, they're forced into it and it's an expectation.
Unfortunately, Sandy began to experience technical issues and was not able to participate in the interview with Bonnie and Jenny. However, at the end of taping, we were able to get this exchange between Bonnie and Sandy.
So that would be my first question. Have you experienced any harm or known risks? Some examples of this, particularly in the pornography industry, is unwanted pregnancies, STIs and STDs, prolapsed anus, I mean, not to mention the battery, the physical violence and the horrific scenes that are often depicted in pornography. So I guess just risks and harms, if you wouldn't mind summarising some of those.
The sex industry is vast and complex. I definitely don't think you can blanket shame or pigeonhole the whole industry. There are definitely risks and harms in the adult industry. For me personally, I've experienced a lot of different levels and types of sexual assault. The strange thing is that some people don't realise that it's not okay, because they assume that because we are sex workers, that it's okay for them to treat us like that. I want to show people that you can enjoy adult entertainment while being respectful and being courteous, and that it doesn't have to be something that is dirty and frowned upon. Because when you shame industries and things like that, especially around sex, that's when there are people who can miss out on being able to access the support services that they need to keep themselves safe.
Ideas in radical feminism pose it that all of the sex industry, or what more liberal people call sex work, could be deemed as an institutionalised rape of women. That's a macro big picture of the industry. And I would really like to know what you think about that, what your conceptualisation is of the sex industry.
I've had worse incidences at home being raped by my boyfriend because he thinks I'm rooting guys at my parties when I'm just a XXX showgirl. I feel strong and confident when I work, and I demand respect. I don't let people do things that I don't want them to do, and I make sure I'm in control. I think that a lot of women do enjoy working in the sex industry. There are horrible things going on in the world, and I think the only way we can start to fix that is to talk about it. We need to raise our men and our women to respect one another.
I would really love to know, outside of the sex industry, who you are, what are your interests, what you're passionate about. So if you could tell us a little bit about that, and perhaps as a bit of an add-on, if you weren't part of, involved in the sex industry, what else may have you chosen with your career, perhaps, Bonnie? You know, is there an exit plan for you? Is there something afterwards that you're interested in? So, I'd really like to hear about your experiences, what other alternatives there may have or are.
My life feels full, and I think that people need to look at different ways of defining success. I love helping people. I love caring for people. Every day, my main focus is just being kind. I want to spread joy, spread happiness. I did well at school. I could have gone to uni if I wanted to. At this stage, I don't really think I need an exit plan. To be honest, I'd be happy working at Spotlight or the corner store if I got to be polite to people and make people smile and be proud to do my job well. If I had had a little bit more courage as a child, perhaps I could have done acting or musical theatre. I wanted to be a model, but I didn't really have the facial features for it, even though I was tall and skinny. But you just do the best you can and strive to do good.
But okay, so because kids are starving in Yemen, what am I supposed to do? Not eat over here?
No, it's not really about that, Jeff. You know, the funny thing was I went to Thailand, and I'm lucky here. I have choice and I have options. So if I have a guy ring and they're having a party and they haven't booked and it's a Saturday night and it's 10 o'clock at night and I know they're drunk, if they don't have $1,200 for me to come down to the beach and do a show, I'm just like, look, man, you'll have to book ahead next time because I don't really want to go to a place where people are drunk and that's risky for me and things like that.
$1,200, are you really going to go at that late of notice to a beach with a bunch of drunk guys?
Yeah, for sure. What do you think? That's what I do for a living. I go to places where people are drunk for lots of money and I do shows. But what I'm saying is that I have choices and I have options. Whereas like in Thailand, like when I went to see a Triple X show on stage in a club, it was I cried because it felt to me like someone pushed my mother out onto stage to pop some penny turtles out. That's what it felt like. It felt like someone pushed this old woman on stage to do this. And it was heartbreaking to me because it made me feel so proud to be in Australia and have choice and have options.
Right.
And every time I go to a job, I'm always specific about people being polite and respectful to me.
Right.
Like when people book shows, I always tell them, the more polite you guys are, the better the show. So do you know what I mean? Like as long as you guys have manners, and if you want to touch my boobs, please may I? Yes, you may.
Right.
So I just want to champion good manners everywhere I go in hope that spreads that for other people as well.
Well, it's very interesting to me because, you know, being a gay dude, I've looked up a lot of female stripper contracts for all the straight guys. And then I've looked up male stripper contracts for the lady friends. The male stripper contracts are more strict than the females. And it's like they don't. And I'm like, how does this work? How does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, like, men are typically given a lot more, like, rules that help them, like, protect themselves than our women, right?
Like, it's the most insane thing to me. Like, they could knock somebody out, but the female who's in, it just, of course, like, I'm like, even them, as a stripper, they have more protection and, like, just straight up, like, from the jump are just like, fuck you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, a female is like, oh, well, I got to deal with the drunk guy possibly groping me. And I just got so
possibly
infuriated.
It does I'm happen like, all the time.
Ah! Yeah.
It makes me insane.
Yeah. It's certainly not a like if, it's a when, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It just depends how you hold yourself and carry yourself at the job when those things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, have you guys ever had like really bad experiences in working?
Numerous. Numerous.
20. Do you mind sharing? What would be your worst?
Oh, one guy, I finished work and I was leaning over the bar in a long skirt and just grabbing a drink and talking with the bar girl. A guy lifted my skirt up over my head and licked me from front to back.
Oh, no. See.
That's in a bar after work, like at the bar I was working at. And I picked him up by the throat and carried him across the room and threw him against the wall. And I said, why would you just do that? Do you know what I mean? Like, and he's like, oh, my friend dared me. I said, dared you to sexually assault me? He's like, no, that's not sexual assault. And I'm like, well, actually, it is. Guys don't even realize that when they're doing things to women, if you're a sex worker or an adult entertainer, that just doesn't even class as sexual assault to them because they we're not often classed as just a general woman because they don't see us like that.
Right. Yeah, it's part of the show.
I think that like speaks largely to what Sandy's asking about, like
exactly,
yeah, like driving the exploitation of like women and children, right? Like this idea that we're
desensitizing people,
as you participate in the production of this sort of material, it sends a message to society at large that like the behaviors that you're seeing are acceptable to do, not only in the privacy of your own home, but like if you ever meet one of these women who are in there, that is the sort of like behavioral interactions that you can anticipate, and it's okay to do that. I mean, like,
but that goes down to the fundamentals of teaching children in your own home. Mm. Like, we were raised that if you're kind and polite and courteous, good things will come, and you always treat people with that same level of respect. So for us, it's not dirty and like this. People should be teaching, instead of going, no, don't watch porno, you should be teaching, and there should be more information about how the world actually really works, you know?
Well, yeah. And I think it goes back to the argument of like, okay, you know, we got to take all the violence out of TV because kids, we're desensitizing them, and the video game argument, and what are we doing to all of
but
these
it's
people?
Art imitating life, really, isn't it? Well, all the time. But,
you know, like my kid that's not, you know, he's going to be 9, and he's like, oh, I want to watch this or whatever, you know. And I had to say to him, I said, bud, listen, when I was a little kid, you know, I was your age, I was watching Lethal Weapon with my mom. We were watching Mannequin. My cousin and I were talking about all these movies that we would never let our kids watch, that just when movies first came out, our parents were just kind of like clueless. Right?
Like Rocky Horror Show or something?
Yeah, no, like all the R-rated like action movies.
Well, whatever. I had older brothers. They were like, I had teenage brothers. So we would watch, like, I remember they would like love the Friday the 13th films.
No, we didn't. We weren't allowed to watch that. But I could watch movies.
Oh, I was terrified.
In it. My mother never made a big deal out of a sex scene or Look Who's Talking in the beginning of that. I was born in 83. That was what, 89 or something? Mm-hmm. Right,
so I'm 83 as well.
83, woo!
We're all 83.
Yeah, better.
And Jenny, don't we still look so young and sexy? I mean,
so much moisturizer.
Oh, I know. I spend $1,000 a year on face cream.
I'm just gonna plug Estee Lauder. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been using it, so that's why I got the hat this low to cover up all the wrinkles. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, my mother never made a big deal of it, so it never was where I was.
See, my mom was the opposite. She was
like,
kind of
up her kid's face, like, don't look at that. And I'm like, it's just the thing swimming to the egg. What's the big deal?
Well, I would find that, like, in my household, when there would be, like, a horror film on, it would be, it was quite okay to watch somebody, you know, being thrown from a window or having a knife rammed into their head. But if there was a sex scene, then my mum would be like, I think you should turn that off, to my brothers. Because they were a lot older than me. Like, my eldest brother's 10 years older than me. So he was a teenager when I was still a little kid. And he was watching those films.
Watching Dallas and Dynasty with my mother. As a little kid in, like, the ABC Soaps General Hospital, all my children, and what, like, One Life to Live. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, sex scenes, but my mother hated porn or whatever. And she, the one thing I could, Howard Stern. She hated that son of a bitch with a passion. And the thing, like, my brothers would hide the porn and stuff. And it's like, when you attack a kid like that, you're going to push them towards it more. That bitch had no idea how to work the computer AOL when we got that dial-up thing. What the hell do you think I was doing at night? And I was in the closet going to a Catholic school. I was getting dick pics every night, honey.
I think you touched on something that is like so important, right? It's like accessibility. Like that is really the thing that we are witnessing changing.
Yes. Well, and that's too, like from when you were doing porn, mm-hmm. and I was going to say, like, you know, even with just the way you interacted with people and how the times have changed to where you were like, well, I don't want to see my friends. It seemed invasive.
Yeah.
Where now it's like, you think about the celebrities that have dropped the porn videos, you know, like Paris and Kim, and how yeah. it was blown up. Where now, if that happened, I don't know that it would even be that big of a deal. Nobody cares.
Well, and it's so easy to get to, right? Like everybody yeah. has in their hand something that will take them directly to like yeah. a sexually graphic image. Whereas like yeah. before, to get your hands on a Playboy or a Playgirl, like you had to do work. Like you
yes.
had to do your parents' fucking room.
I remember Penthouse in the toilet at home every day.
Uh-huh. Totally.
One of the main things I remember about Penthouse, they had an article, I used to read it in the toilet, about these Kiwis that they would just get drunk to the point where they would want to, like the whole point of getting as drunk as they were was to throw up in each other's mouths. Mm-hmm. And this was an article in Penthouse magazine. And apart from looking at all the pretty girls thinking, oh, I'm going to be a model or a stripper or a porn star or an actress or something, besides all that, I just thought, how crazy is this?
Mm-hmm. Well, do you remember,
and now you've got the internet.
We're all the same age. So like when Pam Anderson's porn like broke.
Oh, it was like groundbreaking. It was horrifying.
I don't really remember that. We didn't really have the internet.
Well, no, I do remember it. I remember it because it was like a huge thing.
It was global, right?
Yeah, no, I remember it was a huge thing, and it sort of it started a trend. It kicked off a trend.
Yeah.
What is that?
I was in love. In love. It started a problem for me for the rest of my life.
Well, geez, I must have been watching Rocky Horror Show on VHS and Gypsy Rose Lee and stuff like that.
The one that's like, I'm proud to be a stripper, was over there playing with her fucking Barbies while the gay kids were like...
You know, I remember, and I remember then, like, you know, then it sort of led to a trend. Like, look how Paris Hilton and Kim Kardashian made sort of names for themselves, where they were socialites that had a sex tape leaked, and that's how they made
it work
themselves. Yeah, it worked for them, and they didn't even have to revisit it again. Like, they just did it once. Actually, on that note too, it just reminded me of, like, you know, the persecution that – do you guys remember China from WWE, WWF, yeah. the wrestler?
Maybe.
She was on Dr. Drew as well, wasn't she, Jenny? Yeah. Like, she wasn't on your season, but she was on the show.
Yeah. We China. Had her on our show, I think.
Oh, really? You had China?
I think so. Or she was friends with
her. Because she's passed famous. Now. She's passed now, and it's – terrible because I watched the persecution, like, just for me as someone watching it, and I would look at videos of just her wrestling, and the comments from different men would be like, oh, go and suck another dick, slut, and all of this terrible stuff. Yeah. And I'm like,
but that what did she do that's so wrong? Well. Like, you gotta remember that people feel there's a veil with when you're talking about the internet.
Mm.
Yeah, like power. because it's the internet, it's like it's okay to say whatever you want and not be a nice person.
But I think also, though, the persecution she got was nothing because it was a video with her and a boyfriend that was first leaked.
Okay,
it was her and Ekpak, who was another wrestler. Honest.
A lot of it has to do with the way she looks. I mean, if we're going to tell the truth, come on. Like, I'm not trying to be mean, but if she was like one of the gorgeous blonde ones from years earlier. But a lot of it had to do with the way she looked. Like, people are just assholes. That's the fact of the matter. If she was a gorgeous blonde, beautiful, curvy, not manly, deep voice, fucking drug addict, ex-fucking wrestler, you know, like, people were just mean to her. I mean, she was...
The wrestling industry shunned her because that video was leaked by X-Pac, who was the guy that was in it. And he was able to still wrestle, and she was not allowed to anymore. Like, she was the dirty one and not him. Yeah. And I think that was where the
shaming.
Yeah.
I think it started before that. I think there were some issues that started before that.
Oh, definitely. There was more going on behind the scenes, because yeah. I know there was problems with like with Stephanie marrying her boyfriend, things like that. There was obviously stuff happening. But
controversy sells.
It was very, very, very sad. I think it was with when we were doing the convention circuit, when we were on Blog Talk, when Jake was still on.
Yeah.
I
you chatted to her.
Yeah, yeah, when we were doing the
convention. You better dig into your archives. I want to listen to it.
But I've met so many, gotten so many crazy
It would be interesting to listen to.
She might have been at Jake's show. I can't remember. But, you know, one of the things earlier, oh, my God, it just went out of my damn head. Why does this keep happening?
Maybe, Susan, if it's important, it'll be back.
No, because it was for you. Because I keep, oh, what does, so we were talking earlier about, like, what kind of happens, like, for a stripper. What does a bad day on a porn set look like for you? Like, did you have, with like a co-star where you were like, motherfucker, you're going to ram that thing into me one more time and I am going to claw your eyeball out.
Yeah. I mean, I think the good thing about being a porn star, and especially one, like I was successful. I had representation. I had really well-maintained relationships with the other porn stars. Right. So like, all the guys and women that I worked with were all like super respectful and like mindful and would like check in and like make sure everything was okay. And like, there was a lot of like, at least in the shoots that I got sent to there was a lot of like consent based work that was done like on a regular basis. And like, keep in mind, like, unlike the guy who like totally fucking sexually assaulted Bonnie, right? Like 100% sexual assault.
But that sort of stuff happens all the time.
Totally, totally. But like, I saw these guys again. Like we had ongoing relationships, and so it's
exactly.
It didn't make sense for people to like do things that would be damaging because we would have to work again together, and like. Oftentimes we were represented by the same agent that I was. So like, there's like a chain of reporting that was possible where like, I'm not gonna get the fucking cops involved, but like, if you fuck me up, like Derek's gonna hear about this and like, he's gonna be pissed because then I'm not gonna be able to work and then he's not gonna get money and he's gonna be pissed, right? So like there was this, like, there were like structures and like a hierarchy in place that really like worked to protect me. And I was also very fortunate because I lived in a structure that like provided me some protection. Like I was successful. I had an agent and I had things that like it worked out for me. It's just not the case with all porn stars.
Right.
Well, actually on that note, should we like James, I know Sandy's dropped out of the conversation. We should show the couple of memes that she had wanted us to share and just see what you girls think about those.
What happened to that white dude that was here?
I can't even see that.
Mitchell?
Mitch? Yeah, Mitchell dropped out as well. I don't know what happened there. Okay, so...
What is this? What's happening?
Can you guys read that at all?
I can vaguely read it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like...
More or less, it's a contrast between like somebody who has to work in sex work opposed to somebody who chooses to, and somebody like, you know, due to the way their society is.
Yeah, I mean, like this is the spectrum of sex work that I was referencing earlier when you said like, how do you feel about sex work? Like, it really ranges from like, because both of these people are sex workers, and like one of these people has the like agent,
the option.
Yeah, like has some choice in it, right? Like has the privilege to be able to say, yes, this is something I want to go into, right? And I think, you know, it is a little bit like gratuitous to have, like it's sort of excessive, right? Like, and it's definitely like plays on some like really strong themes of like it is young people of color who are being put into these situations,
right?
Not wrong there, you know, and it is like. A lot of like privileged middle class white women who are like able to like benefit from the sex work that ends up on fucking videos and like Vivid and shit, right? And like this is the spectrum of sex work, right? And even within the spectrum, even within the women who have privilege, there is still a question of choice. Like if women are doing it because they can't make money any other way, and this is like the best way that they have to make money, like that is also a question of like, what are your choices then? Like, if this is available to you.
So you think it's still exploitive?
Now, I mean, to an extent, isn't any sort of like capitalist industry exploitive?
Absolutely.
Then, yeah, for sure.
Okay, so this one says, I can sort of read it. My eyes are terrible. Okay, when 50% of sex workers are men and 50% are women and 50% of clients are women and 50% are men, only then I will talk of sex work like it's labor, like it's a labor issue. As long as 90% of sex workers are women and 99% of clients are men, which is what the statistics keep confirming, prostitution won't ever be a labor issue, but an issue of male supremacy doing what it always does against women, perpetrating misogyny.
I think if you're going to raise your children to be misogynist assholes, then that's going to happen. Like, you know, I know people who are misogynist assholes. My brother's father is one. He'll probably kill me for saying that on live TV, but hey, we know what it's.
Is that right?
We know that's. Do you know what I mean?
If he does,
the truth.
Yeah. Whereas we were raised by my sister's father, who taught us that if we're all adults and we're all kind and we're all comfortable and we're all, you know, if we all have consent, like I just realized the other day that I'm a nudist. Like I didn't even realize that I actually was. I had this light bulb moment. But for me, it's that if I'm doing anything and there are, if as long as we're all adults and we're all happy and we're all comfortable, that's okay. Whether I'm walking around my house butt naked talking to my mates while I'm getting ready for work, or whether we're on the beach on Keppel, as long as there's no children around and everyone's treating me kindly and I'm treating people kindly that are around me, that's what matters to me, and that's how more people should be raising their boys and their women.
And you know, Bonnie, I was saying to you, remember the day like when we shot the package together and I was just chatting with you and I was like, you know, I wasn't surprised or shocked, but I remember when we were kids together in primary school, like you were just the girl who had come bike riding with us, doing everything else. Like there was nothing there that would have pushed, like you didn't come across as a child that wasn't,
I was basically a boy in high school, Luke.
You were a bit of a tomboy, and that's how I remember you as well. Like, you'd just hang out with everyone, like you'd hang out with me. I think you and I were sort of in that middle space where we were kind of, you know,
yeah,
we weren't,
you were almost
actually
a girl,
one of the boys, but
a boy.
Yeah, maybe. Not yet a girl. But we would sort of just hang out with, like, we would mostly hang out with straight guys. And for whatever reason, we were both just accepted into their groups.
Well, it's probably because us and all the friends we used to hang around probably didn't even have any other friends. So.
Well, it's a small town, man. They probably had no choice. So they thought at least these two give us a bit of entertainment. But you know, there was nothing there, though. Like, you know, a lot of the times they say, like, people who enter sex work and that have this previous traumas as well.
Oh, I have plenty of traumas.
Like, so do I, but, like, there was nothing obvious.
That's not why I work in the sex industry. I work in the adult industry because I have a background in musical theatre and I love to sing and I love to dance. And we didn't really have – I wasn't very good at it, but – and when I found alcohol, I worked out that I could practice it.
If I shake
my boobs and sing and dance at the same time, that people found that more entertaining. And then you just get better at it.
Oh, God.
I think it is.
James as well. I know James is there watching. I had a clip from, because Sunny Lane was going to weigh in on this. So she's a porn star as well. Did you ever meet Sunny Lane?
I love Sunny. She's such a sweet girl.
But this is Sunny's video that she sent us weighing in on sex work. Sure. If James could show it. This is literally Sunny's contribution.
Love.
Oh, she's
like,
so pretty.
He's just like, Sunny's just like, no fucks. But
she's the greatest.
She didn't say a fucking thing.
No,
she was just like, whatever. Like, she told me, she's like, yeah, I'll give you a video. I'll give you a video. And then that's what I got. And I was like, she didn't give a shit.
When we talk to her again, send her literally all of my kisses. Send them all.
Oh, really? Is she a lovely girl? Because I watched her. Okay, Jenny, my favorite show. This is horrible now. my favorite show in 2005 was Jenna's American Sex Star. I was living for that show. Because it was American Idol for porn stars. Mm-hmm. And that's how I saw Sunny, because she was a contestant on it. And I was like, this show is off the hook. Yeah, and I'm like, I was living with these people. I was living with these two lesbians, and they was like, come and watch this show. And they were just appalled with it. They were like, Luke, that's horrible. You shouldn't be watching those poor girls. I'm like, it's amazing. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, it's everything someone could want. Like, it's like American Idol dialed up 100 times. Like,
yeah. Sunny is probably one of the most, like, genuine, kind, and generous young women that I met in my entire career.
I got that vibe from her too. Like, you know, she knew how to talk for the camera, but she had this vibe. She was quite authentic. Yeah. She was, you know, she's charismatic, but she wasn't fake.
Yeah, she's like so down to earth, and like you just know what you're getting, and like, yeah, she's just like unapologetically who she is, and like,
oh, she sounds awesome. I wish I could like make all you girls dinner and have like a little dinner party if you weren't in so far away.
No, I'd like to find out who her pot dealer is.
Oh, I mean, you know.
Just saying.
Well, isn't it legal over there now? Is it legal where you guys are?
Seattle, right?
Yeah, there's
Washington.
Yeah.
It's legal.
Yeah, it's legal everywhere. It's fucking everywhere. It's everywhere. And I'm sober, like super sober. So like.
Oh, wait, you're totally sober now, right?
Oh, yeah. I've like over 8 years, like almost 8.5 years sober. Like, I'm fucking. I smoke weed. I don't do anything except watch Law & Order and eat Ben & Jerry's.
Like, I'd probably just fall asleep.
Yeah, it's fucking wait. Awesome. Oh. But I just won't do anything in my life. I just want to do something. I don't want to look back. I don't want to get to my deathbed and look back and be like, oh, I had so much Ben & Jerry's. And I saw every episode of fucking SVU, right? Like, just.
Well, it was right. We were talking about that when I was with Luke the last week when we were social distancing, taking photos and stuff. I was saying to him, like, I've been stoned for like 20 years, or actually 15 years, but I've been drunk for 20. So now I'm on month 4 of not drinking alcohol, and I haven't smoked weed for years and years too. But do you know what I mean? It's just so different to be sober.
Very different. Congratulations. 4 months is a big deal.
Well, I did 5 months last year, and it was the worst 5 months of my life. I had a headache every day for 5 months.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It'll do it.
And then I drank for 7 months.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to try it again, see how it goes, you know.
Well, now instead of setting a goal for a certain amount of time, I'm just trying to look at it now as in I'm a non-drinker now. I don't I can't even have one.
Yeah,
because I think that it'll just be a downward spiral pretty much.
Well, I remember, Bonnie, you actually made me laugh because I love how frank you are when you were talking about your bottle of champagne that you use for your shows, like your video shows.
Oh, and yeah, you were like, about that.
Because you were like, you know, Luke, as an alcoholic, like every day I think about I think about putting it into the fridge so I can drink it. And she's like, but let's just be honest, Luke, like if I was going to drink it, I'd drink the fucker hot.
Yeah, but I'm worried if I did put it in the fridge, that's a step towards actually having a drink. Like, don't get me wrong, I've drank in passion pop, you know, hot out of it after it's been in me, you know, hoo-ha and whatnot at parties. I don't really care. It's still delicious. but yeah, if I put it in the fridge at home, I'm going to drink it. So I just went, that day that you were here, I was like, nah, I'm not putting it in the fridge.
It's fun, girls. I'm in the same boat. I didn't drink for about, 5 months from the summer. Had a few right around the holidays and stopped again. But when the quarantine hit, I ran to the liquor store because I'm like, these kids are going to be homeschooled. If they shut the liquor stores, I got to be prepared. And it's been sitting in the cabinet gathering dust. I'll do it like a couple times a year, and eventually I know I'll just stop. It's not.
It just doesn't work.
You feel like shit.
Yeah, you just feel like shit.
You do.
You know? Like, and I love my red wine or whatever. Like, Scandal was the death of me because
with a nice meal.
I would be, like, watching Scandal. You know, I had the big...
Wearing white.
When I would watch, I have my big glass. I always had like a fishbowl. So I drink wine like by the gallon. You have my popcorn. Hi, kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good.
Not worth it.
Oh, I just think about all the times I've been drunk and like I just think, how did I even survive? Like I've been to parties where like when I first met my boyfriend, I had to get him to drive me to a Bucks party because my car wasn't working and I can't drive the you know, gear stick thing. And he took me to this party. I got out of the car naked and I was so drunk. I was just like, yay, let's go. And I fell over so many times. I come out, I thought I broke my leg. When I was back at the house after, I was like crying to my boyfriend, like, oh, I think I broke my leg. And I felt like shit for days after. And now I just think, I just don't even know how I did it. Even though I love my job, I can still go sober. It doesn't worry me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, do you two feel that you have body issues?
Oh, me? Oh, fuck, all the time.
Silly. Next question.
Well, no, because people would think because you know, you got naked on camera, would have sex on camera, sure, that you would have all the confidence in the world.
Yeah.
You know, like people would be like, okay, you do stand up, you know, you do this radio show, you get on there, you talk to people, you're funny, you're great in the crowds. And I'm like, dude, I'm the most quiet person in real life. I don't let people, I'm an introvert. Like I have super anxiety and I don't like going on stage. I have horrible stage fright.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You know. I mean, like the like body dysmorphia hole that is inside of me is bottomless. And I tried to put a lot of stuff in there to fill it up and make it fucking full. And now fill it. So I just like look in the mirror and I'm like, well, I guess that is the body that I'm in. And I, yep, there it is.
Right? Fuck off. You are way hot, bitch.
You're still hot.
Well, she's over here like, I'm stuck in this body. Bitch, my tit is bigger than your whole body.
It's really complicated when you start talking about body issues with women. Like when I was growing up, I mean, you would remember, Luke, in high school, I was teased for being anorexic and, do you know what I mean, whatever, go eat some food. But I'm also nearly 6 foot tall. Sorry, I'm half in the screen. You know, nearly 6 foot tall. So, you know, at 60 kilos, I was being teased for being flat chested. And it wasn't until I turned 18 and got drunk and flashed my tits at a pub, the guys were like, yeah, great tits. I was like, I have boobs. I didn't even know because I'd just been told I was flat chested for 5 years in high school. And then when I quit smoking weed, I put on 30 kilos and all of a sudden I have this womanly body instead of being looking like a tomboy. And now I don't even know what to do with it. I'm a bit squishy around the middle, not as fit as I'd like. But you just, for me, I don't like doing still photos, but at a party, as long as you're moving around, people aren't looking at your stomach. They're looking at your boobs bouncing, you know? So that's how I get through it.
Yeah. I just let go of the idea that it fucking matters. Like, it's not going to look like this in when I'm fucking 80, you know, like, body. Like this thing keeps on like living and changing and I keep like existing inside of it. And so like, we'll just keep driving the car and see how long she goes. And I think like, yeah, I'm a therapist, right? And I work with a ton of women and like, I would say less than like 1% of my clients have been able to escape like some sort of like body focused dysmorphic issue. Right. And like, I don't know that it is realistic. Like, I think our minds just sort of like naturally do this thing, especially now with access to like the different ways that bodies
images.
Yeah. Like we just see bodies and we're like, oh, and then we see our body and we're like, oh, and then we see that and then and that and then this and then we're like, oh.
I'm definitely going through that. I used to be someone who I was a little bit lucky. I was just a little bit of a body beautiful and I didn't have to work for it. But now that's
called being
like
young,
now that right? I've got a baby, like she's three now, and I'm just like, it just is it's dad bod's a real thing. Like it just
happened.
You
know, you didn't.
And I look at old photos of me and I'm like, wow, I know I didn't carry the baby. But she affected me.
Yeah.
Because I look at old photos of me, I'm like, wow, I look so different. And like, I look so
fit. But we all do.
But isn't that funny that like none of us could see the body that we had at the time we had it?
Exactly. And I had no idea.
And then like, what are the chances that like right now we're looking at the body that we have and like 10 years from now we look at the body and we're like, man, what was I freaking out about that I left out when I was 37? Like, oh, it was a good year, you know? And then you can look at 10 years from now, look back at 10 years from there. Like, there's this like, yeah, just this disconnect between like what my eyeballs see and then what my mind is telling me is like, like this thing is, I call her Brenda. She has fucking, she is off the rails sometimes. And like Brenda is pretty sure that this is not like good enough. And so I'm just like, cool, Brenda.
We have photos done. Like I was just about to embark on like a comedy thing before the quarantine went down too. Like we were doing this and photos done and got them back and I was like, I'm not fucking using any of these. I don't know who that dude is.
I hate photo like, shoots.
I was like, when did I get this fat again? What happened?
Like, I feel this. The same sometimes.
Can't have this. I was like, oh no, bitch. It's nothing but cocaine and X-Lasks till summer. We got to just thinking. I'm like calling my therapist. I'm like, I need emergency sessions. We got to do 2 therapy sessions a week. I'm like, my marriage failed because I was fat and now this. I'm like, oh no. I'm like, I put on all the weight again, bitch. We got to fix me. I'm like, I got to stop. And then my Chinese shrink, you know, the one that does the meds, I go in there. She goes, you have some manic if you pill make you skinny.
Yeah.
Doesn't this shit work?
Oh, does it work? Send some to me.
It says it was some for ADD. It was not controlled. It takes away your appetite. It's beautiful.
Ooh, yum.
But my therapist was like, Jeffrey.
Yeah, just post that shit. Post that shit and move the fuck on with your life. That's what I say. Use the fucking photos, post them, do whatever you need to do, and move on with your fucking
life. Oh, I can't. Do you know, I had to pay crazy money to have these photos done. You know, I had a photographer come in. Yeah. We set up all these different shots.
Yes.
I won't even look at them.
That's
different. I'll give you a hot tip. I've got a tip for you, Jeff. I've got a tip for you. And this is what I tell girls when they're training. Like, I'm trying to train girls to work with me because I want a doubles partner. They're always like, oh, I can't be a stripper. My boobs aren't big enough. Well, oh, I only got little titties and there's no way I could do topless.
Oh, mine are plenty big enough.
Well, this is what you just got to remember. People don't care what it looks like. They just want to see it. Honestly, they really just want to see it. So anything is good.
No, no. Look, I'm sure homegirl could tell you like, well, I don't know. Girl, did you ever meet a lot of, you know, hang out with the gay stars?
Me?
No.
Jenny.
Oh, she leaving, girl. She's like, I'm fucking done with y'all yokels.
I want to just say thank you to both the girls today. Like for coming on, speaking so candidly, I'm really it's a little bit disappointing that we couldn't have the, because I wanted to have like not a debate, but you know, just a discussion with people who have opposing views. But for whatever, I know Mitch had to drop out. He was actually pro sex work, and Sandy wanted to talk about, you know, the oppression kind of stuff. But I think we went over it anyway. And that was the points that she just wanted to make.
But I'm sure there'll be a lot of people debating it in the comments later, Luke.
I'm sure. But I just want to say thank you so much, girls, for coming. Here's Jeff. You can ask her a question quickly, Jeff, before we go.
Ask me a question.
I don't know what Jeff, the fuck I was saying.
You were asking her, did you hang out with like the gay porn stars?
I was like, we came back and you were just gone. I'm like, Jenna!
I had to go pee. I was gonna pee.
Always gets me because he'll like go to like one person or whatever, you know, and I'm like, one of these fucking times he's gonna come back to all of us and I'm gonna be doing something fucked up. And he always gets me. Always. I'm like, I'm over here like looking at my fingernails, like, and I'm like, fuck. I'm like, thank God we're just taping this. The fuck was
so yeah, what saying? Was your question? You were something about gay porn stars or something. Like, did you asked her?
Yeah, she hang out with like they saying it.
God, it was on some tangent.
Did she hang out with them or something?
Yeah, but why did she hang out with them?
We were on some tangent.
Because
I don't know.
They're so vain because they're so vain. Because you were talking about like, oh, just let it hang out. And I'm
yeah,
like,
guys, thank
how
you.
It works like in the gay world and like gay porn, dude. Like you have to. Yeah, like so.
Different strokes for different folks.
Gay men are more vicious. They're the most vicious things, I think. You know, if you got a little bit of poot.
To gay men is that they get older and they get bigger and they get softer and they get wrinklier. And just like all of us, we just get older, right? And so like this year, you can just be, you know who, okay, I don't know if you've seen Toy Story 4 or not. It's, I mean, you'll have
to. Oh, yeah. I got three
kids. I don't have kids, so no.
Okay, right. So so two of you know Duke Kaboom, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Like, just be who you are right now. Like, the most brilliant fucking advice from Toy Story 4. Be the body that you have right now. And, like, if this is the body that you die in, wouldn't it be nice if you could just, like, relax in it a little bit?
Oh, no. Definitely. I have a thing in my will where they have to cut me up. And I want the casket standing. God, Jeffrey.
Oh, my God.
I want them to make me thin and, like, you know, pull the face back.
Yeah. I mean, there's people that can do that for you before you die.
Well, yeah, just get the old face creams going now, Jeff. You'll be right.
Look, I slather it on at night. You know what I mean? Like, earlier, because I was wearing this T-shirt, I was like, James, I'm going to get the Saran wrap and tape my tits down. Because they were so big in this T-shirt. I'm like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Look, well, once again, when you're in your 30s and your marriage ends, your businesses go, and then you adopt kids on your own without your husband, honey, and then you find yourself single and you got man boobs.
Yeah.
It ain't cute, right? Like, I lost a bunch of it, started dating, and there was some nice, but I'm like, I just don't care. I don't really like men right now. So I'm kind of like anti-dating, so it's all right. You know, I don't mind it. Yeah. Like, when it's time for dick again, then it's like, I'll lose the weight. Because I'm like the gay Kirstie Alley, Ricky Lake.
But you know what I think is going to happen? I think that there is somebody in this world who is going
to... No, because I won't fuck with fat people either. You know what I mean? So that's the thing.
Well, I know, because you won't fuck with yourself.
Right. So I won't fuck with a fat dude.
If you start to fuck with yourself, then maybe you'll fuck with some other people who have, like, regular person-sized bodies, too.
Well, no, because I don't like...
Gotta love yourself first before others will love you.
As Rip Paul said, you gotta love yourself before you can love somebody else.
Honey, I want to...
Or at least you gotta fuck with yourself before you fuck with somebody else.
Well, I will. I will get up on that Total Gym and do me some Chuck Norris hee-haw.
Okay.
Oh, Total Gym. I want one of those.
Girls, I want to thank you both so much for coming on and just talking so candidly with us. Like, it was a great discussion.
It's nice to meet you, Jenny.
Nice meet you, everybody.
I want to take her. I want her to be my secondary therapist.
Oh, sweet. Well, I make all my clients do exposure work, so like, you would be posting that shit if you were my client. That would be
cool. I want to see these photos. You should show us. You should show us one day.
Yeah, little bits of exposure. Send them to us, and that'll be a step. And then we're going to fucking post that shit on social media for you.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. We won't, and I won't do that to you. Can I selfishly promote something that I'm doing right now?
Oh, my.
Okay, so I wrote a it is a book, and I'm in the middle of doing a pilot study on it. So it's called the Phone Zone Challenge, right? And it's designed to help you have more like psychological flexibility with your phone. Who here is on their phone a little bit more than they'd like to be?
Oh, my God.
Okay. So it's a 30-day challenge. There's like morning and evening reflections, and there's like change activities that you do throughout the day. And so right now I'm looking for participants who will give me feedback on user experience and like marketability of it. So go to the phonezonechallenge.com or just phonezonechallenge.com. Or if you just want to email me directly, Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E at seattleanxiety.com.
All right. But no, we'll give away a copy today, like of Jenny's book as well. I'm Jenny, because it's an amazing read. And I really think, like, you know, for me, it let me sort of sit back and go, you know, I could identify more things about myself just from reading your experience, Jenny.
Okay, guys, if you want to get a copy of I Am Jenny, it's available on paperback now. Where books are sold, go over onto our Facebook page, facebook.com/myuncensoredradio, and you can find out details on how to get a free copy of her book today. Okay, so to be a part of Jenny's new study, you can go to phonezonechallenge.com.
Yeah.
.com. And you can... Yes, and send her an email or info.
Send me an email. or you can go to Fuzz Zone Challenge and get me through there, or you can email me directly at jennie@seattleanxiety.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much, ladies, for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And I had a lot of fun. Thanks, girls.
Yeah.
Talk to you again soon.
Hope to chat again.
Thanks. Bye.